Quit playing games with my Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Oh, hello there, Alan.
And hello, Devin. I always start and I say hello to John. Devin feels left out. So hello, Devin. How are you?
Hey, I'm all right. I'm still a little upset for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're all still panged by the injury that last night's loss has put into our hearts. Am I right, John?
Yeah, last night was disappointing. Heartbreaking, shall we say, but the real heartbreaker for the week has to go back to the Clipper game. Because Dallas, when they lost Chandler Parsons and Dallas had such a rough schedule, we were thinking, oh, this is going to be a game they should win. And I still think they should have. But Dallas has had since gone 9-3. Rick Carlisle's just an amazing coach, and he made the adjustments. And so that Dallas game wound up not being such a gimme after all. But that Clipper game really should have been a gimme. And to go ahead and lose to the Scrubs when they're not trying to win, that just tells this team that they're not as far along as they thought they were.
Okay, so without going away from this last weekend, because obviously we want to talk about the three games that have taken place, I want to pin it on a game even deeper back. And you really have to look no further than about a month ago. The Jazz lost a Saturday game, and it was a game that should have been won and was a give me even more than the Clipper game was. Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I mean, you can pin this season on a couple of those games. Brooklyn, the Clippers, games that were right there for the taking for the Jazz, and the Jazz didn't take advantage, let them go. However you want. I mean, you can name every cliche in the book. It plain and simple, the Jazz lost some games they should have won. And that Brooklyn game to me looms large, very large right now. Because if the Jazz had won that night, it wouldn't have mattered if you lost to the Clippers. It wouldn't have mattered if you even lost to the Mavericks. But they lost to the Brooklyn Nets at home that night.
On the other hand, you could go back a little further to that game where Jeff Withey got pancaked at the end of the game and there was no call. So they barely lost that game.
Which one was that?
There's
one?
A lot of. Was that Houston?
It was a Houston game.
Oh, that's right. That was a Houston game. What were you going to say? There's a lot of games.
Well, there's a lot of games they should have won and they lost. There's a couple that they won that maybe they shouldn't have. But one thing that really jumped out to me, I was looking at clutch stats. And if you look at I'm looking at clutch advanced stats, so offense and defensive rating, which are my favorite things to look at. But the Jazz net rating clutch, they're 28th in the league. The only teams that are worse than them in the clutch are the Suns and the Sixers.
I see a glaring trend right there. The Suns maybe not, but two of those three teams are what? I don't know, one of the top three or four youngest teams in the league.
Yeah, and I think Suns are too. Well, if you take away Tyson Chandler.
I'm just looking at that going, it really comes down to it, and you want to talk clutch. I saw a back and forth between Andy Larson and somebody else last night. They were going microcosm of microcosm of microcosm. These last four or five games of the season for the Jazz is a microcosm of the season as a whole and really where they're at as a team. And that is a young team that goes back to what you said a minute ago, clutch. They can't win in clutch games. They can't win the final stretch of games that tend to be extremely important. Why? Because I think they're young. I know that's a cliche everybody's tired of hearing, but it's a fact. It's the truth. They're young.
Well, that is a priority right there in the offseason, is they need to get more veterans. And they need a veteran with valuable experience. Someone who can be more, how do I say this? Lead by example. Like, the oldest guys on the team are Joe Ingles and Trevor Booker, and they have their experience, and that's great. But they haven't been in that many NBA clutch situations. Joe is a rookie here, so he's in his second year. Trevor Booker, he had some playoff experience with the Wizards, but the Wizards were kind of this weird up and down team. I don't know, but they really need some wiser heads there. And they also recognize that they need to be deeper. They lost a lot of their good players to many injuries. The Jazz just were not the same team when Favors and Gobert were out.
So
lost Alec Burks for the majority of the season again.
So what you're saying is the Jazz need a Derek Fisher type player? Sorry, guys. Everybody listening, sorry. Yes, I mentioned Derek Fisher.
We're kicking him off the podcast for the rest of the night.
Yes, I mentioned Derek Fisher, but hold on for a minute. Go back to when the Jazz were a young squad with Deron Williams, Carlos Boozer. They were winning 50 games, but weren't in a position to figure out how to get over the hump. Jazz added Derek Fisher, and right away there was some veteran leadership on how to win. Now, take the name Fisher out of it, because I don't want to put that in the equation, but the point still fits. They need a guy like that who can come in and shed leadership qualities or, you know, I've been there qualities that they don't have from anybody else.
I'm not going to lie. You make a good point. The Jazz could use someone, right, John?
Yeah, when they got Derek Fisher, the Jazz had missed the playoffs 3 years in a row. And then Derek Fisher joined the team, and that kind of put him over the edge. I mean, the Jazz went 41-41 that year. I think that was Darren's rookie year.
Yes.
And then year two, they got Derek Fisher, and all of a sudden, they go to the Western Conference Finals.
Now, granted, the red carpet was rolled out for him because the best team in the West lost, but you take that out of the equation, it goes back to that veteran leadership.
Yeah, and Derek Fisher was able to do that. And so here we come to the end. That Jazz team hadn't been to the playoffs 3 years in a row. Now here we are. We're a Jazz team that hasn't been to the playoffs. This is actually going to be the fourth year in a row they missed the playoffs, barring some miracle tomorrow with the Kings and Rockets.
Go Kings.
And they could use, this is the right time for them to pick up another talented player and get them over the hump and get them back into the playoffs. You know, Hayward and Favors are your leaders, but this is the fourth year in a row that they're missing the playoffs. Last time they were in the playoffs, they were both second year guys coming off the bench, and they got swept anyway. So they went ahead and got rid of all the vets. They let this young team grow together, and now I think they're ready to bring some vets back to round out this team.
You know, I'm looking at the schedule right now, and some people may hate me for doing this, but I'd like to run through and look at the losses that the Jazz have, because we really can't put this game, this one game, or even the Clippers game, like you were saying. They have had so many opportunities, even going back to the first game of the season. Okay.
Wait, you want to go 41 games back?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Well, that team they lost to in the first game of the season, they also lost to again later.
Okay, so they start off the season, they lose by 5 to the Pistons on the road. Okay, that happens. The next loss comes as a blowout against Portland. Fine. Tuesday, November 10th, they lost by 4. Do you guys remember that game at Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know where you're going, but hold off. I want to look at the games they probably should have won but let go. Cleveland is not necessarily a should have win because they are a better team.
It was right there. It doesn't matter. You go to the next game, November 12th, 91-92, loss to Miami. They lose the next day, 93.
No Gobert in those two games.
Right. They lose 93-102 to the Magic. Really, they should be able to beat the Magic. Okay, they lose to the Mavs, fine. Early in the season, I can understand that. The Mavs are experienced. They lose to the Thunder, just a beatdown in that one. The first game against Golden State, November 30th, 103-106. Almost had a win there. Lose again to the Magic at home. This one, 94-103. Lose to the Kings. I believe that was a favorsless game, 106-114. Lose to the Thunder, 90-94. So they've got some here. The next game they lose, 98-104, overtime loss at the Thunder. Just a miserable game against the Spurs. December 16th, Pelicans, 94-104. Really? Should you be losing to the Pelicans this year at home?
Right. Well, and that's where I'm looking at. You mentioned a couple of teams. You mentioned Orlando, and you mentioned now the Pelicans. Teams they shouldn't have lost to. I don't mind that they lost to the Thunder. I don't mind that they lost to Cleveland. I don't mind that they lost to Golden State. It's Orlando. It's the Pelicans. Those are the teams you don't want to lose to.
But it's how many close losses here. Yeah, there's a big loss, 14-point loss to Minnesota. There's a 2-point loss. I think this may have been the one that we were talking about on January 4th. 91-93 to the Rockets. If the Jazz pull out that game at home, we're not having this conversation.
So all of this,
you know,
I was going to say all of this goes
of those
back.
Early loss,
go ahead, John.
Go ahead. Okay, I'm as I'm looking through those, I think one of those losses that is a microcosm of that time. Okay, they lost to the Pelicans. Why did they lose to the Pelicans? That is not only a game where they don't have Rudy Gobert. Joe Ingles was actually injured at that time too, but that's also a game where your point guard play is bad. They were starting Alec Burks because they couldn't have any decent point guard play. Trey Burke comes off the bench. He shoots 4 of 13. You know, they don't really get much of a chance there. They just didn't have.
And that was during a stretch where Neto was wildly inconsistent too.
Yeah, Neto only had 10 minutes that game. But yeah. But they were starting Alec at the point guard because they were so desperate for decent point guard play.
Well, and even then, so Devin's just ripped off a bunch of losses that were, you know, close games that were right there for the taking. Again, it goes back to that microcosm of events that we talked about at the beginning, where the Jazz are just not experienced enough to win in the clutch. And that's a sign of a young team. I mean, if this were Karl Malone and John Stockton, you know, back in those days, or even Darren Williams and Carlos Boozer, close games like that, Jazz don't lose those games. But instead, this is a team of guys where your best player is 26 years old, 25, 26, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't have many guys older than that on the team. I mean, you're just young. They're just inexperienced.
But it is so rough to look back because everyone's like, oh man, they choked against the Clippers. If you look middle of January, John, you probably have this up in front of you. You remember they lost by 2 points to the Kings on the 14th. They beat the Lakers, and then mm-hmm. they go on the road. They lose a double overtime game at Charlotte when Charlotte was really struggling. The next game, 2 days later, they lose an overtime game against the Knicks. The next Monday, they lose a 3-point game at home against the Pistons. And then they start to put it together and rally some wins there. But there's just been so many games that have been 5 points or less. And how many of those games could be won just by one less turnover or making a couple free throws or just not making a bad decision on the last shot of the game? I believe the broadcast said that the Jazz set a franchise record for overtime games this season.
Yes, they did.
And that just tells you right there, you can't wait until the end of the year to be like, okay, now we really have to win these games. There should have been more of a sense of urgency when you're dropping basically 3 games in a row. Let's not count the Lakers as really a game. 3 games in a row, either in overtime or by a basket.
Yeah.
So, John, you tweeted some numbers out earlier today, and this has been actually a bit of conversation, not just for you, but I've listened on the radio today. Hans and Scotty were talking about it. It's been talked about a lot, and it's been nailed till it's dead, but it's true. You tweeted out something about injuries.
Yeah.
Well, give those numbers out.
Okay, let me go back to my roster page. Okay. So Rudy Gobert he's going to miss 21 games because I'm gathering he's out tomorrow.
He didn't travel to LA.
Okay. So he's going to miss 21 games. Favors missed 19 games, assuming he plays tomorrow. Alec Burks, he will have missed 50 games. You have Dante Exum out for the year. You had different spots where Hayward has missed 3 games. Hood missed 3 games. And also when Favors and Gobert were injured, their injuries, I think they overlapped for about 6 games. It's like Gobert went down for a while and then Favors got injured. And so you had like 4 or 5 games where neither of them were there. And then Gobert came back, but Favors was still out for a while. If I remember right, the Jazz record was 12-19 when one of those or both of those guys are missing. And you can extrapolate that and say they're still a winning team and they are still a playoff team if they hadn't been missing one of those guys for so many games. And Locke was saying this morning that, you know, each team, you can expect your starters to miss about 10 games apiece, and it works out different ways. But they were missing their starting point guard the entire year. They eventually had to make Alec Burks the starting point guard because the other two weren't giving him anything. And then he goes out for most of the year. It just kind of speaks to how weak the point guard play was up until the All-Star break, that the Atlanta Hawks can have this third string point guard who's getting a lot of DNP CDs. And he comes on the Jazz, and one game later, he's the starter. And Max had his ups and downs, but it was pretty amazing to watch Burke and Neto go through their struggles, and then Matt comes on, and I kind of forgot what a normal point guard was like. A point guard that's actually getting 5 or 6 assists a game. It was a different thing. So you factor all that in together. Your rookie Trey Lyles played a ton of minutes. He started 32 games just because of the way the different injuries worked out. They had to rely a lot more on Trevor Booker than they had anticipated. It all came down to injuries. They were doing the 10-day things. They're bringing in Eric Green and J.J. O'Brien and just trying to make pieces work because there were so many injuries.
Here's a question I want to throw out there because I want you to answer this. I have my personal opinion on this. I want to see where it aligns with yours. And Devin, I'll pose this to you as well. John, injury prone. What is your definition of injury prone?
Someone who can't play 70 games a season.
Okay, because I've had it posed to me that Alec Burks is injury prone. And then to make you know, matters even more interesting, heard on the radio today where there have been a few folks that have even suggested that, and it was, I think it was Gordon Monson I heard a little bit from on the radio tonight, but that Derek Favors is injury prone. Are we going to buy into either one of those yet? I mean, or even that Rudy Gobert is injury prone. That came up. I mean, you know,
what does that even mean?
Well, that's what I want. That's what I wanted to know from you, because here's the thing. And Spence Chegget said this back to Gordon tonight. And this is what I've been harping on since, you know, Rudy Gobert sprained his ankle. Okay. That's injury prone. No, that's basketball. You sprain your ankle in basketball. Everybody does it. Everybody does it. So I don't know how that fits in injury prone, but I mean, what are your thoughts on any of those? Well, do the Jazz have an injury prone player right now or no?
No. Alec Burks was fine his first 3 years. He has had two seasons in a row where he's missed the majority of the season. So that makes you worry. I'm not ready to yet say he's injury prone. This season is actually going to be the first season that Favors doesn't play over 70 games, not counting that shortened season. He played that entire season. So,
and he's not, yeah, he's pretty close to 70 games.
Okay. Well, and I,
yeah.
And you have to factor in
games this year.
The problem before was it was a back problem, was it not? Which was determined to be caused by a bad mattress.
So, yeah. So my question to you then, Devin, same thing. I mean, John just pretty much summed up his thoughts on it. Do you feel the same way?
Do you know who's injury prone?
Who?
Steph Curry.
Well, yeah, you could argue that.
Steph,
I mean, he's
Curry's
played two
injury prone.
He's
so
played two great seasons, full seasons, but you'd have to
come
almost
at
think
me
the same
and
thing.
Say that Derek Favors is injury right. prone. So is Steph Curry. So maybe Golden State needs to part with him. I think we could work out a switch. You know, get out of here.
No, and that's why I brought it up. And my whole thing, you know, we'll leave this subject alone here in a second. I just wanted to close it out with that. Look, Alec Burks' injury, his first injury, was an injury he's had. An issue that he's had since college. It was made bare and needed attention when he was flagrant fouled and thrown to the floor by Aaron Aflalo. Is that injury prone? No. That's dirty play by the other player. And you were caught in the line of fire and got thrown to the floor. Okay, his second injury this year came as a result of what? Would everybody argue or with me that perhaps Paul Pierce wasn't a little bit dirty on that play? Went uncalled, but would we not agree that's a plausible statement there? So, once again, two freak injuries because a player was physically accosted by someone else on the floor. I don't call that injury prone. And likewise, a sprained ankle, I don't call injury prone. Back spasms, if it becomes a regular occurrence every year, that's where you got to be concerned at. But if that's fixed, I don't have an issue with that. So no, I'm the same way as you guys. Nobody on this team is injury prone. Nobody.
I'll tell you this. If you want to see injury prone, you can look at Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose, I would say, is injury prone. You could look at Joel Embiid. You could say he is injury prone. At this stage in his career, that is how it seems.
Greg Oden
was another name that I had thought of as well. Injury prone.
Tyreek Evans.
Guys. Eric Gordon, I believe, has had a
half of the Pelicans.
the Pelicans organization.
The Pelicans are injury prone. Period.
But with the Jazz, yeah, you've got some guys who have some bumps and some bruises. But at the end of the day, these are elite athletes, and the level that they are playing at, competing at, this isn't like you're going outside and just shooting a few baskets on the driveway. That's not what this is. Injuries are going to happen when there is that much speed and that much physicality and that much desire to win.
82 nights a year. And then you add 7 preseason games. You add 2-a-day practices. You'd add up and down. Yeah,
morning
you're right.
Shoot-arounds, exactly. Pre-game shoot-arounds. you know, guys who are shooting baskets until midnight at Energy Solutions Arena, and their name is Kyrie Irving. You have people playing and so much physical activity.
I wouldn't call his much. His was pouting. Sorry, his was pouting.
He could have gotten hurt.
It was pouting.
A little bit, yes.
Okay.
But you see what I'm saying? It is, yes. It is not just like a weekly rec game that people are used to. This is day in, day out, go hard or go home. And injuries are going to happen.
Yep.
Frankly, I'm surprised they don't happen more than they do. If it wasn't a soft league, you would see more injuries, I would think.
Probably.
You know, but there are a lot of, I mean, just look at the way things are going now. There's a lot of teams resting guys.
No, I agree.
End of the season.
I agree.
They're resting them for a reason. Injuries, with the level
of medicine and sports medicine available, it's hard to be injury prone in the league anymore. It really is. So, all right, that's out of the way. Let's look ahead now. John,
there's nothing to look ahead.
There is to look ahead. We have one more game, and even if the Jazz play with pride, it is one more game. Does everybody really? I mean, how much will the wheels come off if the Jazz lose to the Lakers at the Lakers on Wednesday night?
That would be salt in the wound of the season.
Well, yeah,
it is my hope and prayer that the Jazz play their heart out and beat them by 50.
By the way, I heard on the radio today, tickets to that game, the cheap top of the, I heard this on the radio with Hans and Scotty today, the cheap, last row up at the top of the upper bowl is going for $900 a seat.
Oh, that's reasonable.
They did mention
it. I hope Hood and Hayward and Burks all talk together and just say, let's see if we can get him a goose egg in his last game of his career.
There you go.
Let's have him go 0 for 16. It won't happen because he's going to go to the free throw line because he just will.
Yes.
But yeah, I hope they play as competitively, as throat stompingly as possible.
You know what? They need to. Because
yeah,
they need to respond.
If
last
they
night.
Lose that game, you know Sacramento's going to win too. That's just the way that it would go.
The thing is, they will know at tip-off if their playoff chances are dead or not, because that game starts 2.5 hours after the Rockets-Kings. So
they should know
if their chances are there or not.
And even if it's not there,
we want them to win. Yes,
just have some pride. You know what I mean? They should really want to go in and just spoil Kobe's party. Just because they can. If they don't, I mean,
yep.
What kind of note is that to end on?
Yeah. And if by some gracious basketball gods blessing us, the Jazz should win this game and Houston should end up losing. Next question is playoffs or no? You asked that question, John. Why don't you answer it first? Playoffs or no?
Do I think they're going to make the playoffs?
Well, I'm just looking. I'm just looking at our show notes. You said playoffs. Do we care? Yes or no? Do we care?
Oh, do we care? I care a lot less that now that the Jazz aren't making it. I will still watch, and I will still be interested in that, but just not near as interested than if the Jazz weren't a part of it, because this is going to be the fourth year in a row that the Jazz don't get to be part of the conversation.
You mean you don't want to see the record-breaking Golden State Warriors go down in the playoffs before they get to the NBA Finals? They're not, dude. Spurs in seven over the Warriors. That's the only series we care about, right?
I'm sure I will be interested in, but this week, yeah, I mean, I eventually will, and the Warriors-Spurs Western Conference Finals is probably going to be just as amazing as any NBA Finals series ever played. So,
what are the matchups as they stand right now?
Well, let me go back to the standings.
You would have Warriors-Rockets.
I believe it's Warriors-Rockets.
You would have...
Warriors-Rockets, Spurs-Mavericks, which would be a good series, even though the Mavericks are banged up. Thunder and Grizzlies. And then Clippers and Blazers. Clippers and Blazers will probably be pretty competitive.
I have a question, though. Is there any chance of it being a Golden State Dallas opening round? Any chance?
No.
Okay, darn it. I was hoping for we talked earlier about that 2007 series between Golden State and the Mavericks, where Golden State ruined the Mavericks' best record season. I'd like to see the Mavericks return the favor.
I mean, when it's all said and done, I think Mavericks are actually going to be sixth seed. I think Memphis will fall to seventh.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm really only kidding. So if anybody wants to hogtie me because they're saying that because they don't like that I'm saying that somebody other than the Spurs will beat Golden State, I'm really not saying that. I'm just having fun with it.
No, you better watch it. Because we took some heat last week because there was a little bit of Golden hate.
We did.
Show.
Who gave us heat?
The Golden Hate Warriors.
We had a listener.
Who was the listener that gave us a heat?
I don't want to call him out because would be very upset.
Sean would be upset? Oh, okay, Sean. Gotcha, Sean.
Was it an email or something? I saw the comment.
Yeah, it was on Twitter. It was public.
Oh. And I didn't get a chance to play with him play ball with him Saturday. He's already talking about replacing one of us as a host on this show, so.
Well,
I'll go over the East, even though it's not as exciting as the West. But Pistons, Cavs, Raptors, Pacers, Heat, Hornets, and then Hawks and Celtics.
Yeah, there's not a lot of compelling series over there.
I'll wait for the second round, and maybe we'll have an interesting series with Boston and Cleveland. But other than that, I really don't care.
All right. Does Cleveland make the finals?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
It's LeBron. Are you kidding?
Okay.
Do you guys remember what he did last year?
Well, yes.
You're right. I do think he'll turn it on, but there's a part of me that just looks at the Raptors going, is this year that they finally break out?
Of the first round?
I mean, they're second seed. And it'll likely be a Cavs-Raptors Eastern Conference Finals. And, LeBron's still one of the best players on the planet, but I'm looking at Dwayne Casey versus Tyronn Lue, and it just gives me pause. I'll just say that.
But correct me if I'm wrong. Have the Raptors ever been out of the first round?
I think you have to go back to Chris Bosh's days.
Yeah, and before that, you'd have to go back to Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter days, and they did make it out of the first round as a group then.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it had happened.
Yes.
I don't follow the Eastern Conference.
Well, yeah, they're a fairly young franchise, so...
Oh, wait a minute. No. My bad. I said Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter got out of the first round, but Tracy McGrady never got out of the first round. So, never mind about that one.
Hang on, I'll find you the last time they won a playoff series.
I think that was one of the knocks on Tracy McGrady is he never got out of the first round. So here I am giving credit that the Raptors did.
Bosh never got out of the first round.
Oh,
you have to go back to the 2001 playoffs.
Vince Carter.
Wow.
Well, McGrady wasn't on that team at the time, though, if I remember correctly.
No, it was Vince Carter, Antonio Davis, Charles Oakley, Mo Pete, Mark Jackson, Keon Clark.
That's
Ty
right.
Ty Corbin.
Oh, wow.
That must have been Ty's last year.
And
Ty
Corbin
was on.
I'm just thinking about that. And that was the first year after McGrady left. That was the talk of the town for McGrady going forward is that he didn't get out of the first round with them because it was after he left that they did. And then he never got out of the first round in Orlando or in Houston. Never.
So it's happened once.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah, the Raptors got out once, yes. All right.
We have like listeners that were like just being born then, I'm sure.
I'm not.
2001?
Now.
Yeah, so 15-year-olds.
Yeah. Kids like their hoops. Stay in school.
All right, let's transition to what's next. The aftermath. I think I'm likely going to title this episode Aftermath, because we're looking at the aftermath, not of just the Jazz's loss last night, but of the Jazz's season as a whole. What's next? John, you wanted to talk about some things happening next. Salaries, free agency, other things, you know, following Thursday's locker cleanout. What is next?
Well, most of their guys are coming back contract-wise. I think what they need to do in the offseason, they're going to prepare for the lottery. They are probably going to have anywhere from the 12th to 14th pick. Just depends on coin flips and such. Unless Chicago wins their final game, which I don't think they will. But you are going to have Dante come back. I think they are going to probably be comfortable having Mac as their backup to Dante. I would guess they keep Neto as the third point guard. I think they're going to see if they can get anything for Trey Burke. I think they've made it pretty clear they're ready to move on from him. I don't know how much value he has since he's been racking up all these DNP CDs, but I do think Trey probably could use a change of scenery. And it's nothing against him, but he hasn't really shown that much progress from his rookie year, and I just think change of scenery would do him good. Jazz need to decide if they want to bring back Booker. I would assume, pick up Max option and keep him. Chris Johnson would be gone. Jeff Withey, I don't know if they keep him or not. They did sign Plyce, they signed Plyce to a fairly big contract. He's making $3 million a year. That's more than half the team. So they need to decide what they're going to do there. But what I really think they're going to do is look at all the gaps they have and just say, we got to fill this with talent. We got to get some, you know, 30, 31-year-olds in here. I don't know. Do you think they stay the course, or do you think they kind of look at what they have and say, do we want to make a big move? Do we want to trade one of our core guys, upgrade somewhere else?
I am of the opinion they're not going to make any big trades and big moves for big name players. In fact, listening to Tony Jones talk, listening to Aaron Falk talk, listening to those who are a little closely invested at the media level with the Jazz, I get the impression the Jazz are very committed to their core. So if anything, I think the Jazz are going to go after some depth, veteran depth, I think is more what they're after. I'm just looking at Hoops Hype for salaries. Booker, like you said, is off the books. Mac, I believe, is non-guaranteed, isn't he? Because he's on, or it's a team option.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, he's a team option.
They'll
so,
pick it up.
Yeah, they should pick it up. But They're really not looking all that bad for next year. And, oh, by the way, Neto's cheap. You know, you've got guys that are cheap enough that I think they're going to go out and I would think of a mid-level exception type player, you know, a veteran mid-level exception type player. I'm not sure who's available on the free agent market, but that's where I think the Jazz go, is they'll pick up some veteran depth. They're not after getting rid of the core right now. Alec Burks staying. You know, Trey Burke, they'll ship, but Alec Burks is staying. You know, they're not going to move Gordon Hayward. They're not going to move Rudy Gobert. They're not going to move Derek Favors or Rodney Hood. Beyond that, who knows?
They think about it. You have to think about it. You have to entertain any offer that can potentially make your team better, do you not?
Yes, but I still believe that Dennis Lindsay and Quinn Snyder believe in the development process, and they are invested in these young players and their development. So I have to believe they will look for veteran leadership and veteran help, and that's all they're after. John, I mean, you asked me, what do you think? Hello, John.
Oh, sorry, I hit mute.
You asked me the question, now you tell me.
I think they'll keep their options open, but I don't think they will be aggressively shopping. I think the only one they'll be aggressively shopping is, can we get anything for Trey Burke? They will look around if they think they can get something of value for Alec Burks. They have to keep in mind that Hayward only has one more year. I think they feel good about their chances of keeping him. But there are some more than others that I think they feel good about. You know, Hayward buying a house in California. I don't know how they feel about that versus Derek Favors, who stays here in the offseason. You know, some guys are more committed than others to the community. That doesn't necessarily... it's not that big a factor in their decision-making. I'll say that because, you know, during the Williams, Boozer, AK years, I don't think any of them lived in Utah. I think they all took off in the off season. So, you know, there's a lot of different directions they can go. But when your team has missed the playoffs for 4 years in a row, I don't think you can let yourself get complacent. I think their approach is going to be a little more active than it might otherwise have been had they made the playoffs this year. But since they missed them again, I think they're going to be a little more active than they might otherwise have been. It wouldn't surprise me at all if none of the guys are traded. That the thing that would surprise me most is if Trey Burke is still on the Jazz in October. But you know, they have their lottery pick. They have most of their guys coming back next year. I think they feel good about most of their guys. And they're just saying to themselves, please just stay healthy this year. But they're going to build the team in a way that they will be able to better absorb if injuries arise. I think that was a lot of the problem, was Dante got hurt at a really bad time in the season because all the free agent backup point guards were taken. And so when he went down, it was just like, well, we're just going to see if we can ride this out with Neto and Burke. And they kind of were able to, but it was such an obvious talent discrepancy, the point guard position versus the other four, that they had to do something. And so Mac was able to bail them out for the second half of the year. But, you know, I think they're going to build the roster differently bench wise. You know, this year we started with Elijah Millsap on the bench. Christopher Johnson lasted the whole year. They're going to want better options when they're looking at the 9th, 10th, 11th spots on the bench.
Now, you mentioned Exum. Is this a good moment to talk a little bit about him?
Yeah.
Because we had a question, and basically the question was, how do you feel about Exum compared to other young point guards in the league? So with that, I'm thinking people who were drafted either the same year as him or the year after, if you want to. We could even look at the year before. That's completely optional. But we're just talking the past few years. Exum had a lot of hype coming in. And with this injury, this setback, he had a little bit of a rough offensive rookie season. How do you feel about him? How comfortable do you feel with him coming back as your starter? And are there any guys that you would take over him from those recent draft classes?
That's hard to say. I'll go ahead and review point guards that have been taken past few years, starting with 2013 draft, which is the year before Exum came out. In order that they were drafted, the point guards of 2013 were Trey Burke, Michael Carter-Williams, Dennis Schroeder, Shane Larkin. That's the first round. And then second round was Isaiah Cannon, Ray McCollum, Nate Walters, Pierre Jackson, Eric Green, Hal Netto, Lorenzo Brown, Peyton Siva. I would take Exum over any of those guys.
I would agree.
I know Schroeder's promising. Although Milwaukee's playing Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Just call him the Greek
name because they spelled it wrong.
Just call him the Greek Freak.
They spelled his name wrong on this site. I hate that. All right, Greek Freak. I can say it right if the name is spelled right in front of me. All right, so 2014. Dante Exum, Marcus Smart, Elfrid Payton, Zach LaVine. He's really more of a shooting guard. Tyler Ennis, Shabazz Napier. That's the first round. Second round. Spencer Dinwiddie, Jordan Clarkson, Russ Smith, Vasil Micic, who's the guy still overseas.
Unless you're going to mention any more names, I know you could probably stop right there.
Yeah.
Or you could just start making up names and we'll see if Alan's actually paying attention.
I am paying attention. Don't start with me. I would have to think of,
I don't know. Is there anyone there you'd take over Exum of that list?
Well, you know, there's players I like their game, but I don't know. I mean, I like Zach LaVine, but like you said, he's turned into he's a combo guard, and he's turned out to be a nice one for Minnesota. Marcus Smart hasn't really panned out for Boston necessarily, because I don't even think they've started him this year. I think, who are they starting ahead of Smart this year, if I remember correctly?
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. So it's not like Smart is doing anything, you know, differently. I'd have to almost say that, well, Exum might be, I still might take him before all of those guys.
You said Elfrid Payton was in that class, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of upside to his game, but Exum just has so much potential. I want to say it was against Boston in Summer League when Exum went down.
Yeah.
Or it may have been the second game or the game following that. But I remember watching him play against Marcus Smart, and Exum actually was performing incredibly well on both sides of the ball. I know it's just a summer league game, but just the promise that I saw in that moment where he was kind of the guy on the floor for the Jazz, it makes me want to stay with Exum. I mean, just still based off potential alone, still based on his length, his defensive ability, the defense is there. That's a given. You know, and there's so much value in that if you can surround him with other guys who can score, which you do have currently. Hood, Burks, Hayward, Favors, Lyles is turning into an offensive weapon. So you don't necessarily need Exum to go and drop 20 points a game.
Oh, by the way, might I add in, Exum is the youngest player of all of these. In any of these years we're bringing up, he's younger than all of them. Still.
Mm-hmm. What about last year? Do you have those guards?
D'Angelo Russell, Moutier, Cameron Payne, Terry Rozier, Jerian Grant, DeLon Wright, Tyus Jones.
The only player on that list so far intriguing enough to me, and having watched him play, I mean, I like Moutier. I like Moutier's game. Would I still take him over Exum? I probably not.
Moutier, yeah, I like Moutier's potential, but he really had a pretty bad year in a lot of different statistical categories.
Yeah. I don't know. Here's my thing.
Turnovers, his efficiency. The thing with Exum is he was so good defensively for a rookie, and that was really kind of Marcus Smart's calling card as well. Both of them were really good defensive point guards that needed their offense to come along. Smart had an extra year to work on that, and it's getting better, but you still don't think of Smart for his offense. Exum in that summer league looked like he was just going to make a major jump from his rookie to sophomore year, and it was really exciting to see. And now with Exum, I just have to look at the progress that we've seen from Aaron Gordon and Jabari Parker and these other guys who had their seasons been able to come back and have been able to show the promise that they were originally drafted for. And I hope, as long as he doesn't get injured again, I think we're going to see the same thing from Exum. We're going to see him, be comfortable physically, overcome his injury, and then pick up where he left off and get back to showing that potential. And
well, here's the thing. You don't even have to look outside of the Jazz organization to see an example of someone who struggled with injuries, let's say rookie year, and made the jump in their sophomore season. And that is Mr. Rodney Hood. Mm. So, I mean, you have a prime example here. Rodney's had a fantastic sophomore year. And Rudy may not have been injured, but made a fantastic jump in his sophomore year. So to think that Exum could overcome the injury and have that great sophomore year, technically his third year, it is not really a stretch by any means.
Yeah.
No, I that's true. And I'm still looking back at that list you mentioned of all those guards. I mean, I still look at Zach LaVine for a moment, and offensively, he's turned out to be, you know, I think quite the gem there for Minnesota. He's athletically gifted, and he's proven that, you know, dunk contest, dunk. I mean, all of those things that we think Dante Exum has in him offensively. We haven't seen them yet, but I guess it depends on what you want at the point guard position. And I mean, like you mentioned with Zach LaVine, I mean, he's more of a combo guard, plays off on the two at times. I don't know. I it's an interesting class. I'm not sure that any of those players are in a position to be judged yet from those draft classes. Unless you're going back to Michael Carter Williams and Trey Burke. And yeah, there's some judgment to be handed down on those kind of guys now. But I think for Exum's class, I don't know, we're at a point where we can, I mean, you have Marcus Smart's been relegated to the bench. You have Zach LaVine, who's playing on a team that's not winning, that you have to think is a lot of promise for going forward. Dante Exum, you know, Shabazz Napier hasn't really turned out to be a lot either. So I just look at it and think, no, I if I were to redraft, I think I'd stick right with Dante Exum, because I think he was the right pick then, and I still think he would be the right pick now.
Yeah, I mean, we can always bang our heads against the wall when it comes to redrafting.
Which I hate doing, by the way. I hate redrafts.
I know.
I hate them. It's like, yeah, you know, the draft is over with. It's done. That's the past. Let's not redraft. Let's just, we've got a group of players now that we've taken. Let's move forward with them. I mean, for that matter, well, if we redrafted, I think we'd all agree that Leonard would have gone number one in the draft. Or number two.
That's part of it is,
right?
You're redrafting. Does anyone get to redraft? The thing that's helpful about looking back at past drafts is, it's kind of a way to gauge your front office and your scouting and see just how good they are and how reliable they are. You know, Lindsay was there for that last part of the Spurs and picking up Kawhi Leonard. And then he comes here.
And he picks up Trey Burke.
Also picks up Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Trey Burke was kind of the last Kevin O'Connor headed pick, and I remember hearing the radio guys talking about it, and it was really between Kevin O'Connor and Ty Corbin when they were looking around. Ty was like, "If you can get me Trey Burke, that would just be wonderful," and they were able to trade up. You know, hindsight, they would have just not traded those picks, taking Greek Freak at 14. They could have had Gorgie Dang at 21, and then they still could have bought the Gobert pick, and you know, they'd be that much farther along right now.
Yeah, but again, hindsight. Yeah,
here we go. Here we go.
And so you have to look at the Trey Burke situation. I don't know about you guys. I was overjoyed.
When they drafted him.
I was too. We really needed a point guard, and we got the best point guard in that draft class, I thought.
I'd almost still argue he might still be. I mean, Michael Carter Williams isn't that great either. So
Schroeder.
Schroeder's passed him this year.
Yeah, I was going to say Schroeder might be the best point guard maybe now of that group, because MCW, no, I still wouldn't take him.
I think Schroeder is now hands down the best point guard of that class. But so, unless Neto makes leaps and bounds, but yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Thanks to Riley, though. Riley, thanks for the question, though, because I think it's a very debatable question. I know Ben Dowsett had his thoughts on it and the redraft. I don't think he had Exum high on his draft in that redraft. I still think he had him three or four spaces behind guys that he took. And I can't remember who he did in that discussion. But it was an interesting conversation. I actually had watched that conversation develop over Twitter between Riley and Ben. And it's one of those things that we can agree to disagree. I mean, Ben says, hey, this is my thoughts on it, but it can go in just about any way, and it depends on who you talk to, really.
And I think it depends on what you want to look at. You know, when we're talking about Exum, we are still looking at potential. And there are a lot of guys, even in the media, you know, who are around the day-to-day stuff, who are just astonished by the potential that Exum has. Sure, you may look at a guy who's putting up better numbers right now or has an extra year under his belt or two. But, man, I'm just excited to have Exum back.
So am I. So I while we were looking at those point guards, I had a few names I wanted to throw out here for you real quick, John. So, you know, looking at free agents this offseason, just so Jazz fans know, realistically speaking, this free agency year is not very good. It's not very good at all. And I looked at, if we wanted a veteran guy, you know, there's guys like Nicholas Batum, Luol Deng, you know, you go down the list, there's not very many guys on that list at the wing position that the Jazz can really pick up that have that veteran leadership. John, I'm willing to say this might not be a year you're going to see much movement in veteran pickups in the offseason for the Jazz.
Well, they only have so many spaces, but, you know, I'd have to look at the list myself. I mean, Dang, what would his asking price be, do you think? How many people are going to pursue him?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I just had the numbers up and I don't even know
where he is right now. Where is he right now? Is he back in Miami or?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, I believe he's in Miami. But I look down the list of wings for just a moment, and there's a lot of young wings that are available. The two biggest names on that list being, you know, LeBron James and Kevin Durant. Jazz aren't going to have a chance at either one of them, so guys might as well leave that thought alone. But beyond that, there's just a list of guys that just don't really, there's not very many people, really.
So, you know, Dang is just the right kind of guy.
Yeah.
He's 30, two-time All-Star.
Right.
Went to the playoffs every year with Chicago.
Yep.
During Tibbs' time. Goes to Miami, goes to the playoffs with them.
Right. By the way, he is currently...
I wonder what his asking price would be.
Currently, his earnings...
But he's also used to starting, so it would be the first time that he'd be coming off the bench.
You know what, though? He's unrestricted, and his 2015-16 earnings are at $10 million, so I know it's going to be more than the Jazz can afford.
Yeah, with the new salary cap, he probably will still try to get that. And $10 million a year next year is a lot less than $10 million a year this year.
And even Nicholas Batum is just made $11 million this year. That's all I'm looking at. You have a lot of young wings that might be cheaper, like Kent Bazemore. You know, Jeff Green is still set. I mean, he just made $9 million this year. But you can go right.
I'm not interested.
Oh, I'm not either. But I mean, Jared Dudley at $4 million this year, or Gerald Green at $1 million.
Yeah, Dudley, that was a great signing.
And I'd actually, Dudley's not a bad option.
Maybe OJ Mayo?
Yeah, I was looking at that one too. So the point I'm making is I'm going to set this up for Jazz fans. For those listening to our show, I wouldn't get my hopes up. I don't know that there's going to be guys available unless the Jazz can pull off something in a trade. I just don't think the Jazz are going to get the free agency pickups this offseason that they need at depth.
Alan, we need to think about the depth chart here, because you're talking about getting a wing. You've got Rodney Hood. You've got Alec Burks.
And you got Gordon Hayward.
You've got Gordon Hayward.
But
and you're leaving off the superstar of the group.
Chris Johnson, right?
Mr. Joe Ingles.
Oh, Joe Ingles.
Joe Ingles.
No, I'm just looking at depth from a depth spot. I mean, you could look at the power forward and center position as depth. I'm just looking at it as a whole. And the Jazz have some depth at different positions to look at going forward. But wing was tested for them this year. I know Alec Burks. They did have Joe Ingles come in, but Joe Ingles is serviceable. But, you know, is he the guy you have to turn to? Right now he is, but is he the guy you want to turn to when you need wing, depth at the wing?
I look at when they signed Trevor Booker. We weren't really that familiar with him. And, in fact, I remember most people, probably me too, who thought that two-year $10 million seemed like a bit much for him, because we really weren't that familiar with him, and he wound up being a pretty good piece. But when we're talking about depth, most of these free agent picks they're going to be looking at are probably still going to be like the seventh or eighth best guys on the team. And, you know, and I mean, they'll go ahead and throw an offer at Kevin Durant and say, hey, we'll give you the max. And you're like, thanks, you and 20 other teams. But when it boils down to it, that's really probably what they're going to be doing, is filling up their bench. Now, how high a quality can they make their bench and do it in a way that doesn't handcuff them in the future, because they're going to be their salaries are staggered in a way where they're going to be needed offering raises from 2017 on. If Hayward decides to stay, he probably gets a max offer, assuming that next year is as good or better as this year. Let's see, who else would be that year? Burke will be gone. And then the year after that, you have Derek Favors.
And Alec Burks.
You have Alec Burks is extended already.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He's got...
We have two more years of... We have one more year of Hayward. We have two more years of Favors. We have three more years of Brooks.
That's right.
Exum, I think they extend him after 2018.
And then Rudy's going to be due for an extension.
Yeah.
After this next year, he will be a restricted free agent next summer, a year from now.
So they'll be wanting to working on re-signing Hayward and extending Gobert at the same time at the end of next season. So
maybe
they'll want to stay flexible there.
Yeah. So, I mean, in the end, I'm looking forward, and, you know, I only throw out names, I throw out wings, I throw out ideas, only because, look, guys, going forward, the Jazz, what are we looking at going forward? Well, I think the Jazz have already shown this year they're committed to development. They're committed to developing their core guys. So they're going to bring in guys that can, you know, play in their place when they're either injured or they take a rest in the game. And Quinn's going to try and manage those minutes and hopefully bring in guys that can give you that manageable option. Are they going to be able to get that this offseason? I don't know. I don't know that they will. So we might see this same team as constituted next year for the most part, give or take a piece or two. And I don't know about you guys, but I am not opposed to that either. I'd be okay with that because this year they didn't get a chance to see what that team can actually do. If healthy, can the team progress farther next year? I believe they can.
Hey, John, help me out here. How many roster spots do the Jazz have to fill? Is it 15?
Yeah.
Okay. So I just want to hurry and run through this. Exum's back. We expect that they'll keep Mac and then keep Howell. So there's three. We talked about four wings because you got Joe, Hood, Burks, and Gordon. You've got Lyles and Favors. And then you've got Rudy. Withy, I believe they have a team option for the next year. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so you've got...
Both Withy and Booker are team option. Or not Booker. That's right. Withy is a team option.
Let's take Withy off. Let's say, because we have Plyce, so that's 11, right? So they've got four spots that essentially they can fill. So one of the things that you see a lot of veteran point guards because they know the system. You know, they kind of are the pace of the game. Would you be surprised if the Jazz brought in a veteran point guard?
A fourth point guard?
A veteran point guard. Would you be shocked? If they've got four spots.
No, I wouldn't.
No.
I'd be curious if they found a veteran center, almost like a Tyson Chandler.
See, I will
Phoenix
say...
Phoenix would happily trade Tyson Chandler to the... Jazz.
And assuming he would be okay coming off
that contract is ugh.
Well,
I don't want the contract. I just want
contract out of the way, assuming he would be willing to come off the bench, I would not be opposed to a Tyson Chandler being a guy to come off the bench at the center position. Just putting it out there.
It'll be interesting. I'm just kind of curious where those positions fall. They're going to have to either I don't think Plyce is going to be NBA ready next season. I don't. Withy has been fantastic when he's been called upon. And I think he's at a bargain price. So I can see the Jazz keeping him. But it wouldn't be bad to try and add kind of a veteran big and a veteran guard. And if they can find someone in the middle, like you were saying, like a Deng or something like that, that would be perfect. But it'll be interesting how they distribute these positions and where they try to fill in.
Yeah,
I'm just looking at free agent point guards, and I'm just not seeing anybody that piques my interest.
What about Conley?
I mean, yeah, Conley's going to be a free agent,
but he's going to be expensive, though.
Jazz are not going to. They're not going to go after Conley when they have Exum. Conley is going to be in high demand.
Yeah, he's going to be expensive.
He's going to be wanting $15 million a year.
But the Jazz do have a lot of picks remaining. And there could be sign-in trades. There could be a lot of things going down. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens this offseason. But just because a guy is on another roster, when you're talking about veterans, does not mean that they could not end up in a Jazz uniform.
Agreed.
Andre Miller has not made a stop in Utah yet, and he only has a couple teams left on his rounds. So,
all right, so let's put a bow on our talk on the Jazz and looking forward. We've spent a lot of time on that, and we still have a lot of offseason to talk. So, I mean, there's going to be more opportunity to talk about this over the next couple of months. Really, not many NBA notes otherwise. Not much in the sports news otherwise. John. What did you have in mind for movie talk tonight?
I saw Hardcore Henry.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it?
And the look on Devin's face, I'm just saying, wow.
Family show, John. Family show.
Yeah. I would say go look at the preview anyway, so you can get an idea of what it is. But it's a movie done entirely first person POV, like a video game, where the audience the character.
I saw the preview.
And now you feel bad for talking about Family Show.
He's a guy who wakes up and he's a cyborg and he doesn't have any memory and he can't speak, but he has to go save his wife who's been kidnapped. And so he's running all over the city and he's shooting a bunch of people. And I went and saw it at the D-Box theater at Megaplex, and I've never seen a D-Box movie before. And this was not the movie that you want to do D-Box on, because I started to get nauseous and I had to turn off my seat after about 20 minutes or so. I just started to feel sick
because it's first person.
And I think I would have been fine. I mean, there's a lot of dizzy camera work because he's constantly getting flipped over and stuff, but having the D-Box, having that extra motion, it was like being on a roller coaster that never stops. And I finally just started to feel sick and I had to turn it off. I think I would have liked the movie a little bit more if I had just seen it in a normal seat. It was a decent movie. It's not very long, which is good for this type of movie. It's also the type of movie where I'm glad I saw it and experienced that, but I really don't have any desire to see any more movies done this way. I think this movie did it, and I would encourage other studios to, don't you go doing it now. This belongs to this movie. And my comparison for that would be like Memento. Memento is a really cool movie that has this really cool narrative hook. I really hope no one else tries to do the same thing Memento did. Now, Hardcore Henry is nowhere near as good a movie as Memento. It's its own experience. It's fine. I enjoyed it. Glad I saw it. But I'm done.
I there's another movie I watched that I kind of got the same feeling you did in, as far as like it's like I had to turn it off or I was gonna lose my lunch. And it was a very raw film, you know, done by some amateurs, but it was produced by Disney, and now I've forgotten the name of it, about a little alien robot.
The robot?
It was a little...
Earth to Echo?
Yes, Earth to Echo. I tried to watch that, got about 45 minutes into it, and was about ready to lose my lunch because of the way it was filmed. So kind of got the same feeling you did in D-Box, only just watching this one regular. So a good film, but... And I get it. I mean, it was a great film. Great, well done. But, oh, wow. I can't watch that kind of film again.
Yeah, I never saw that, but I do remember feeling that way with the first Cloverfield movie, where it was footage and shaky cam, but the cam was so shaky that
yeah,
I just kind of felt motion sick.
You're like, oh, I am ready to, don't eat anything before you see those movies, basically. So, all right, Hardcore Henry, there you go.
It's very, very violent. It's like the most violent video game you've ever played. That's what it is.
More violent than Call of Duty?
Yeah, it's like Call of Duty. Right. Maybe more so.
Did I see that you just finished watching... oh, my word.
House of Cards?
Yes, House of Cards.
Season
thank you.
Four? I did. Yeah, I liked it. I liked the first two seasons. Third, I felt like was a letdown. Fourth season is back on track. I was really impressed with season four.
All right. So everybody needs to see that. I am trying to think of anything I've seen recently. Let's see. Season two of Rebels, Star Wars Rebels came to a close, so... John, I can't remember if you've even watched either season, but I know there's a few of our listeners that probably have. I highly recommend season two if you haven't watched it. Just ended last week, and it was another great dark season. I mean, dark moments of the season, I should say. And the final episode was very dark. So,
You want to talk about the Rogue One trailer?
Oh, yes. I'm very excited about it. You know what excites me about it is the female lead. Disney going out on a limb here. Star Wars doing another female lead in a movie. I am excited about this.
Yeah, it's another Star Wars movie with a female lead who's set to destroy a Death Star. So I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Well, she's not out to destroy the Death Star. She's out to get the plans to the Death Star.
She's going to destroy Death Star. No, it's a completely different movie. I know they were able to go tell their own story, and I think it's just slightly coincidental. You know, my hope is it is its own thing. It's its own story, and they don't actually try to tie her into the, you know, mainline trilogy. I know as soon as it came out, everyone's wondering, okay, is Jyn Erso, is she going to wind up being Rey's mom? I hope they don't do that. I hope they just let it be its own movie.
I agree.
And that way, all the other standalone stories that they're planning can do can be just that, and that there's no pressure to tie it in like a Marvel Cinematic Universe or anything.
Well, we have
our main trilogy already.
And I'm going to put it out there right now, just so everybody knows. Timeline is Luke and Leia are still about 17 years old during the time frame of Rogue One. We know nothing about them to this point. We just haven't heard them even recalled yet, their name even called yet. So it this is still early. The stage is set. This is the group. I mean, here's the other thing. Rogue One, the name. You know, initially the thought was maybe it's about the Rogue Squadron. But then there was another suggestion made the other day. Maybe it's about an individual. And I wonder if our main character is a Rogue One. She's a rogue warrior, a person that's sent out on this mission. I'm really excited. There's a few things I hope for in this. I know we'll see some Vader cameos. I don't know how much of them we will see. I hope we see enough of them to kind of whet the appetite just a little bit. I wonder if they're going to bring in Bail Organa. I wonder if they'll, you know, how much of Alderaan. How much of the Emperor we'll see. I don't know. I wonder what we're going to see in the movie. And that's what I think I love the most about it. We just don't know a lot about the movie going into it. So
I just hope we see a lot of Spock.
Oh, stop it. on that note, we had John drop off, or I should say the call drop. So John went his way. We'll go ahead and put a bow on this episode of Aftermath, as I want to call it. Thank you all for joining us this week. It's been another long episode. We had a lot of things to talk about tonight. So, we want to thank you all for listening. Thank Devin for always producing a great show. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs, at TornbySports.com, of course. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. And you can find us respectively on Twitter, at TornbyDevin, at JediZog, and at The Germs Guy. Sorry, not at The Germs Guy, at Germs Guy. But thank you all for joining us yet another edition of Jedi and Germs. We'll talk to you soon. This is where I would say, John, take us out. Devin, why don't you take us out?
Playoffs?